This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there. Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday to you, TGIF, as we are with you for the next little while here this morning on Sports Daily. Thanks for hopping in with us over the air on KFH, over the video streams on 12 News Connected, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, all the different ways you take in the show. Maybe it's the Odyssey app and you're listening to us from the future. We appreciate it no matter when you're listening to us. You can call us at 869-1240. You can leave us your video comments on any of those forums, or you can leave us voice messages if you are not listening to us live. It's a pretty cool feature on the Odyssey app. You can hit that little microphone, leave us a message. We can get that, take it over the air, or just use it in the future. How are you, Tommy? Good morning.
Hey, happy Friday. Welcome back. We missed you yesterday for a large part of the program. You joined us briefly, but good to have you back.
Been driving for the large portion of the last 2 days, which is always not fun. But here we are. We made it. We survived. We're getting ready for a weekend. We're getting ready for a beautiful weekend. Best weather weekend we've had in about a month, probably, because of all this wonderful rain that we've needed. But now we get to get out and kind of celebrate the summer a little bit this weekend for the first time, which will be nice. I'm sure the golf courses will be packed. The swimming pools will be packed. Everything will be ready to rock and roll. I know the city pools are finally getting open, as they've been kind of rained out a little bit. So here we go. Now we'll just call it the unofficial start of the Sports Daily summer.
Well, and Wichita River Festival kicks off today. Today is the opening day of Riverfest. So this weekend, there will be a ton of activities downtown. Tonight is the Sundown Parade, the opening night concert and fireworks. I figured this out yesterday. I wasn't sure about it, so I got some clarification. If you're a fan of fireworks, tonight's the night, because there are two different fireworks shows in downtown Wichita. You've got the Wind Surge fireworks right after their game tonight, and then you've got the opening night fireworks with the Riverfest about an hour later. So it's going to be a big night and a big weekend, beautiful weather for it.
We're looking forward to it. We know our friends over at Crestview Country Club. We appreciate their support and sponsorship of the program. We'll have a packed and jammed, busy weekend with the pool. I bet that pool is just so crowded this weekend, which will be great and fun. And they just renovated all that, and the golf courses will be open, and maybe it won't be cart path only. I played cart path only the other day, Tom. You'd have been proud of me. I think I got it done in like 2.5 hours of cart path only. But we appreciate them. And next week, Tommy, Monday we'll begin to have our contest to get some listeners out there to play a little golf, check things out. So make sure you're stay tuned for that opportunity next week. It is June when we come back on Monday, if you can believe that. I happen to not be able to believe that. This stuff goes faster and faster. It's pretty wild to imagine, but it is. And we've got you getting ready for it, ready for the month of June. A lot of baseball talk today, a lot of Royals talk. Our insider, Jalen Thompson, will be on the program in the next hour. So we'll talk to Jalen for the second time this week, and that'll be good. We talked a lot about Jack Caglione, some of the inner workings. Now today we'll talk baseball, because for the baseball itself, it doesn't get any better. You're trying to run down the team ahead of you in the Detroit Tigers, and you're 7 games back. Already 7 games back of the division leader. You don't ever want to, you know, overlook the opportunity at the division. I would imagine attendance is going to be really good this weekend. You get two of their kind of co-aces and Casey Mize and Tarek Skubal. So this series will have it all, and we will have it all previewed for you throughout the show today. Some other stuff coming down the wire. Brett Yormark talking a little bit with Front Office Sports and some pretty interesting stuff coming out of that as it pertains to what the Big 12 is doing. March Madness expansion is kind of back on the table. We'll tell you what's happening with all of that as those meetings, I believe, are all sort of wrapping up now. And the, you know, the landscape and all the focus has been on football, but there is a little basketball news, a little Big 12 news to come out of that. So we'll have that today for you as well as we make it through. I'm sure there's like a golf tournament. The NBA finals are at least interesting. Knicks, we didn't have a chance to talk about it yesterday when I was on briefly, but man, the Thunder just, what a bummer for Minnesota to just lay over that way. The Knicks did not do that. And now we've got a pretty interesting little series here as they've come back and they get it back to 3-2. And, you know, I think at the, you know, you just look at it, Tommy, and say, well, can the Knicks win two games in a row against the Pacers? Well, yeah, of course they can. And that's what they have to do now. Now, I'm not saying I'm not predicting that, but it's like, can they win two games in a row against the Pacers? Sure.
Yeah. Can they? Sure. Will they? No. And I talked about it yesterday on the program. I mean, I think that, you know, we're still on a collision course for the Thunder and the Pacers in the finals. I think that the Pacers will get it done. Will it go to a game seven? Maybe. But I think ultimately that the Pacers have shown that, you know, they're the more talented team. It's nothing against the Knicks, but I think the Pacers are the more talented team with the better coach. I just don't think the game plan was great for the Pacers last night. I didn't like the way that, you know, the Pacers defended the Knicks necessarily. I mean, it really, to me, it didn't look like a team that was one step away from making it to the NBA Finals. It looked like a team that was already looking ahead to Game 6. And that's a little bit surprising with a coach like Rick Carlisle, who wasn't able to get his team up and ready to go, because it wasn't even a particularly close game. The Knicks got him by 17 in that game. You know, so I think that they'll respond to that appropriately in Game 6. I think we're still going to ultimately see the Pacers move on.
Yeah, look, I think there's a big difference in what the T-Wolves looked like in their game as far as like not showing up and the Pacers yesterday. I think the Knicks are the better team on paper. We don't agree on that. The Pacers have certainly been playing better. There's no question. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that Tibbs and that team can get one that way. I don't want to dog on the Pacers much until, you know, maybe this gets to game seven or whatever. But what I'm curious to know your opinion on is if the Knicks were to complete this comeback, let's say, do you think they could carry that momentum and get a good series against Oklahoma City? Or do you think Indiana's good enough to get a good series against Oklahoma City? Or do we think Oklahoma City has finally clicked in this postseason at that level where it doesn't really matter?
Well, I think it's the question between what do you define as a good series? Like, is it a series in
six close games?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think you know, six games is probably doable for either one of these teams because, yeah, the Thunder, while they have put it all together, they're not a perfect team. We've seen flashes of that in both of their series. I mean, they lost by, gosh, what was that, like 20-some points in that, you know, one game in the series against the T-Wolves. And then they really struggled at times against the Nuggets, and that series got pushed almost to the brink for the Thunder. So, yeah, I mean, I think either the Knicks or the Pacers can absolutely make it a fun series. But do I think that either one of them will beat the Thunder? No, I don't. I mean, I think the Thunder, they're on, you know, this fast track to being the next NBA champion, regardless who the representative of the team is in the East.
I think so, too. I think I hope so, too, for fans around here. I'm good with any of the three champions. I think they're all good stories. I think all the fan bases deserve it. So it'll be a fun finals in that way. I hope that either one of these teams can make a fun finals because they can play close games against the Thunder, who, quite frankly, are capable of blowing somebody out in a series like that. There's no question the way they looked against Minnesota that they can do that. All right, let's take our first break. We'll come back for our first full segment here on Sports Daily, and we'll talk Royals because they are getting ready for their biggest series thus far this season. It will be the biggest series they play probably all month long. It comes and it starts tonight at Kauffman Stadium. We'll have that preview next on Sports Daily.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you on this. Well, what is today, Tommy? It's Friday.
Friday.
That means we're getting ready for things, you know? It's time for a good, hot, summer weekend, and I think that's what we're gonna have. What do we got on the table here today? We got all sunshine all day, getting up to 76 degrees, and then Saturday and Sunday both into the 80s. This is looking nice, and then you know what's even better? Follows up with more rain chances next week. So listen, as somebody in the iced tea business who really loves sunshine this time of year, I'm loving all this rain. We need it so badly. And I think we're doing real damage to the drought and to the water restrictions and to all these things. So hopefully we make an impact and we get this rain for a little bit, and then we'll get all the sunshine we can handle soon enough. Riverfest, you mentioned, looks great weather-wise. Baseball, I assume up in Kansas City, they're going to get some good weather like we are. And they're going to get a great series at Kauffman Stadium. I'll get your take on all the stadium news. I'll let you catch me up from what happened yesterday that was in there, because I've been, again, on the road for about the last 24 hours. But let's talk baseball on the field first at Kauffman Stadium, where the Royals currently play. And they will play Detroit in a series that, Tommy, I think, it is the biggest series of this season so far. And if you can subscribe to their, all the next ones are the biggest. I get that. But they don't play Detroit again until mid-August. So when you're trailing them by 7, your opportunity will never be better than to play them head-to-head. And they do it now and not again for a long time. This is a big-time series for the Royals. And can they basically, at this point, it's like, can they out-pitch these two aces for the Tigers? Because you think the Royals are going to get into a slugfest against Detroit, who's perfectly comfortable doing that? They are. No, they're probably going to have to beat them in some low-scoring games here.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Tigers are beatable, even though they've got the best record in Major League Baseball. They are beatable. They just lost 3 of 4 to the Guardians, and the Guardians were actually, I mean, they were able to get it done, with their bats. I mean, in 2 of the 3 wins for the Guardians, they scored 7 runs. They blanked the Tigers 7-0 last Thursday. They blanked them 7-5 last Saturday. So they got it done by and large because they were able to hit. Now, the Tigers were able to respond to that by going out to the West Coast and sweeping the Giants. So they're back on track for sure. But the Tigers are a beatable team. Now, when you're going up against a couple of the best pitchers in the American League, for the Royals are going to be facing this weekend, it makes it that much more challenging. I don't know if we can, expect that the Royals are going to be able to duplicate at least what the Guardians' recipe was to beat the Tigers, and that was with the offense. We're going to have to see a much better output offensively for Kansas City if they want to try to duplicate that.
Do you think this offense is ever going to be capable of the heater that we thought it would be capable of before the season. Before the season, I thought this would be a streaky offense again, like it was a year ago. We have not seen that hot streak yet. We've talked about it ad nauseum for, you know, this first 2 months of the season now, basically, that they just haven't been on a hot streak yet at all. They did well in the series against the Rockies, right? Like, that's it. That's the only extended, you know, offense for more than just a couple of days we've really seen all season. And we're starting to see Vinny hit a little bit. And Salvi has found some power again. And Bobby Witt Jr., while he continues to not be on a hot streak, is productive when they need him to be. Like, is there still a world where this offense, by and large, can get hot for an extended period of time? It's so crazy to even ask that question when we think back to the beginning of the year. But the reality is we're 2 months into this thing and they just haven't done it. And I don't know the answer to that anymore.
Well, I'm certainly not expecting it. I think the biggest thing you can probably expect is that you'll see individual contributors get hot. I think it becomes a pretty tall order, a pretty big ask for the Royals collectively to go on a hot streak together, because we just haven't seen that. Could that happen at some point? Sure, but there really hasn't been any kind of recent history to suggest that the team as a whole can come together and be a streaky offense where they all come together, they all hit at the same time. That's been the biggest Achilles heel of this team the entire season, is you can get a couple of guys here and there that they can get hot, and they get on base a lot. Like, Michael Garcia has been basically on a hot streak the entire season. And Bobby Witt Jr. for sure has been productive. And there have been other guys that, you know, Kyle Isbell has a pretty decent average. There are guys that can get streaky and they can get on base. But then the problem is you get to the next guy in the lineup or the guy after that, and they can't drive those runs in, because you just don't have the entire lineup collectively being able to deliver at the same time. So could it happen? I mean, yeah, sure. I guess, like, the team can always get hot. But we haven't seen anything to suggest that that is imminent or going to happen anytime soon.
Well, that's the problem, obviously. Yeah, they haven't done it. I think they're still capable to some degree. I don't think they are capable of doing it at the level that they did it a year ago, which is interesting to say, because it's largely the same players with a couple of them performing better than they did a year ago. It's just not the right ones, right? Not the right ones to drive in runs. Like, Michael Garcia is not the same player. He's incredibly better. They have a decent leadoff hitter now. Like, these things that plagued them a little bit last year aren't the problem anymore. And so in saying that, I think that's the hope, right? Like, if everybody else has kind of gotten better outside of Witt, Pasquantino, and Perez, compared only to themselves, right? Then, yeah, it's pretty reasonable to say at some point, if these guys just do what they always do, like, it's going to come together for them. And so I do keep hanging on to that just a little bit, right? Just a little bit in the back of my head. I'm like, okay, well, maybe they can, you know, it's just taking a long time. We're 2 months into this season.
But let's actually diagnose the problem a little bit. It's not even necessarily the offense not producing, because, I mean, by and large, the offense is producing. Like, you look game by game, and the team is getting hits, right? Like, there have been multiple games where they've got double-digit hits. They're just not driving in runs. They're not hitting when they need to hit. And so, like, if you're looking at, if you really want to dial in on this issue, it's runners in scoring position and not being able to drive those runs in. It's the fact that the Royals are getting on base, but whoever is following in the lineup is unable to drive those runs in. I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me, and I don't even know where you would necessarily find this, but I don't know. Like, I would imagine the Royals have got to be down at the very bottom of the league as far as leaving runners stranded on base. Again, I don't know, you know, what that looks like, but my guess would be they're down at the very bottom. It's not a lack of hitting necessarily, because by and large they are. There have been multiple games where they've had 10, 11, 12 hits and two runs, one run, three runs. You know what I mean? Like, so I think if you really want to diagnose the problem, It's clutch hitting. It's hitting with runners in scoring position. That's been, I think, the major issue for the Royals.
Yeah, and I'm trying to pull this up, just how far off of, right, like how far off of their norms are they? And I'm starting with Salvador Perez here. So Perez is on pace right now, A, to be way below his normal, right? His average, basically over the last 3 years, he is a 25 home run a year guy. He's going for about 90 RBI. Last year, he was a great run producer, though. Last year was this renaissance for him as a run producer, and I think that's what they've lacked, honestly, as much as anything else. But here's what he is from his, we'll call it a three-year average, right? He is on pace to hit half of the home runs, less than half, quite frankly, than he has, but he's on pace to hit a lot more doubles, which is interesting. His hit total is right on pace, right? It's right where it has been, pretty much. He's striking out just a little bit more, not a ton. He's walking about the same. Now, this is not compared to only last year. He had an incredible season last year. This is just like what he's been doing for a while, right? And last year's factored into that. But his power, as far as home run power, has not been there. But he's right on. He's just a little bit below pace in RBI. Maybe we're putting too much pressure on Salvi. Pretty much the only thing that hasn't been there to what he normally does are his home runs. But he's on pace to double up what he normally does in doubles. So his batting average is ridiculous, though. And that's the part that's got to get much, 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 much better for him. He's just not, you know, he's not even getting the singles or whatever. Like, his hit total is going to be way low right now as far as batting average goes. So that's for Salvi. Maybe we need to, you know, maybe we just need to chill a minute. Say he's not going to need to do what he did last year. He just kind of needs to do what he normally does, but he is kind of doing what he normally does other than home runs. Okay. I think, and I'm guilty of that. I'm as guilty as this as anybody. Like, I have probably put too much on Salvi, right? Like, it's not fair to expect something that he doesn't normally do. Let's do the same exercise with Vinny Pasquantino. His three-year average, and he hasn't really had the average, so we'll just go back to last year for him. He is on pace to have more hits, fewer doubles, but more home runs, about the same number of RBIs. He is striking out more, and his batting average and his on-base percentage are climbing back up to the area where it normally is, and which isn't all that impressive. So he's not far behind his pace either. So what is it? I don't know. It's like, it's really, really hard to define what it is that this team's missing. And it's because it's this undefinable thing, which is clutch.
It's clutch. You can't define it. It's like, clutch. It's score. It's scoring
like
position.
There's not like a number. Yeah. You brought up a good one. What are they doing with runners in scoring position?
I found that. I found that information. So if you go to, like, let's just do a little bit of an exercise here with numbers. So the Royals, per game in 2025, they are averaging about 8.5 hits per game. Okay, so that's what they're averaging per game. If you add walks into that, they're actually the lowest team in Major League Baseball, the least amount of walks per game out of all 30 teams, at just over 2 walks a game. So let's average that out and say about 10 hits and or walks combined per game. All right. So then if you look at how many runners are left on base per game, the Royals have left on base. Let's see here. They have left per game, team left on base. Okay. So just under 8. So if you take 10 hits and walks combined per game, and you're leaving 8 runners on average on base per game, it's a pretty bad percentage, right? Like, that's pretty unclutch. You're not driving runs in. How about this? You can even go a step further and look at runners left in scoring position per game. The Royals are leaving almost 4 runners in scoring position on base per game. That's all. I'm on the website teamrankings.com, and this is stats as of May 30th, as of today. So, you know, they're leaving almost four runners in scoring position on base every single game on average.
It's all fascinating because, like, we're looking at it. Players are performing, you know, about to their norm. Bobby Witt Jr., of course, is historic year last year. But that's silly to say. He needs to be doing that every year.
It's a little bit concerning, too. I didn't even realize this until I looked at it, that the Royals rank last in Major League Baseball in walks.
Yeah, that's not a death sentence. The Royals teams that won the World Series, I believe, were always swing heavy, put the ball in play. They didn't strike out a lot. They didn't walk a lot. I do think that's something that is lacking probably from the middle of the lineup, but that's not going to cure what is harming them right now. A walk doesn't drive in a run most of the time. And so it's and Rick, to his credit, has brought this up from since the beginning of the season. It's the law of averages. They were way above average last year. This is a balancing of things. And I think that's totally fair. But I also think that tells us if they're way above average last year, they've been way below average this year. Both of those things feel like outliers. Maybe there is a middle ground that could come this year. We've said it before. This doesn't need to be some juggernaut offense. It needs to only be a league average offense for this team, I think, to reach the postseason. They're not there right now. They're quite a ways behind that. But if they can just get to a league average offense, which as of about 10 days ago, I haven't checked lately, was about 4.2 runs a game, and they're almost a full run behind that, or they were the last time I checked, then I think that you're going to see this team win at a pace that'll be good enough to get them a wild card. Now, can they be better than that? Sure. Like, they could get Cags called up. They could add to the offense through free agency. They could do some of those things and become an above average offense. But I think before you can even do that, you just have to get to this point where just time the hits better, right? That's pretty much what it is. Just time it better. It's not really a tangible thing. So that's what's made this all very confusing and difficult, because there was a point not that long ago where you could just pretty simply look at it and be like, man, Salvi and Vinny suck right now. Like, they're not doing anything. And they weren't, but now they are. And the team's still not scoring any runs.
Well, and I think the question,
I guess that's not it.
The question that I have, and this is not me being negative about bringing up Jack Caglione. I mean, I think that he can impact the offense for sure with his power and his abilities and all of that. I'm also not negative on the Royals going outside of the organization to try to bring in another bat. I think that person, whoever that is, if they go and do that, can help the offensive woes and all of that too. My question becomes, can those guys be clutch, right? Like, it's not about whether or not they're hitting, because the Royals are hitting, right, by and large. Like, I looked up this stat. The Royals are, like, in the top five in Major League Baseball in singles per game. Like, they are hitting the ball and they are getting on base. It's not a lack of them getting on base. So can Jack Caglione get on base? Sure, he can. Can, if they go out of the organization and trade for somebody, can that person hit? Sure, they can. But can the Royals collectively, regardless who's in the lineup game in and game out, can they figure out a way to drive in some dang runs? That's the biggest issue.
The lack of power is very, very clear.
Well, they're the worst team in baseball in home runs.
Yes.
You know, they're like, one of the best win singles, but they're
as trackable as anything. Yeah. And we can tell it, like, as Bobby Witt Jr. is still having a fantastic season overall. He's well below his power production of normal years, well below his power production as far as home runs, as far as slugging percentage, those types of things. He's not even to his own average yet. There will be, now this I am confident in, there will be a heating up for Bobby Witt Jr. He will hit for more power. We're talking Royals. We're just sort of exploring now, coming out of the day off of, like, what's reasonable to expect as we move forward from a really, really bad first couple of months for the offense. Vinny and Salvi are getting back to what they normally do, and it's not leading to any more runs. We have other players in the offense having the best seasons they've ever had, and it's not leading to any more runs. what is going on? Well, one thing that we haven't talked really about all year is Bobby Witt Jr. is also not hitting for the power that he normally does. Now, he is still so productive in so many different ways that you just sort of don't look at stuff like that. But the reality is he is off his regular power pace. There's no question about that. He's stealing tons of bases. He is getting on base at a higher clip than he ever has before. Like, all of those things are going well, but he is not hitting for the same kind of power that he normally is. He's on pace for 14 home runs, Tommy. He's hit, you know, 30 each of the last 2 years. So he's well below that pace. His slugging percentage is about 50 points off from where it was. It's more than that. It's way off of his slugging percentage from a year ago. Like he's, for instance, his slug is 474 right now. Last year, he slugged at 588. He's off of his power pace from last year. And I think that probably has a lot to do with this too. He's just so productive in so many other ways that it just sort of like, I hadn't even really paid him. I knew he wasn't hitting home runs, you know, like he was like on his pace. And that, I think that will come. But I think the positive in all that, is it so unlikely to even think about like him not reaching at, you know, getting at least close to some of those levels, that I think it's pretty easy to imagine that they'll be better offensively just because he'll pick up that pace at some point here this year too.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, I recognize you can look at his slugging stats and be able to say, yeah, it's not at a level that we've come to expect from Bobby Witt Jr. But I also think that we also know how productive he is and impacts games in so many other ways than just that, that I think you can compensate a little bit for that. Yeah, you want to see that slugging get back to at least a level or close to a level on where he's been in the past. There's no doubt about it. He's not hitting home runs like we saw a year ago. And that's been the brilliance of Bobby Witt Jr. is that he is that five-tool player. He's that guy that can do so many different things for your team that it's not the end of the world if he's not producing in one of those levels quite in one of those categories quite at the levels that we've seen in years past. But I certainly think that especially recently, the last week or so, he's been slumping some. You really haven't seen him even get on base at the same clip that we've become accustomed to. And I do think that those things are worth mentioning, worth bringing up. The good thing about Bobby Witt Jr. is that I don't think either you or I have any doubt in our mind that he can't break out of that. I certainly think that he can and he will in short order.
I think the question for me isn't that, because it will. It's that if that happens, and let's say we just have Vinny and Salvi back to normal, right? They're not playing at the level.
Well, I mean, I think Vinny's back to normal. I mean, I think that, you know, I think he's back to normal.
I think they're both back to normal, because I don't know that Salvador Perez, as his age, is going to be a 30 home run a year guy ever again. So I think outside of that, what we're seeing is that home run power convert down to doubles power, because he's on pace for more doubles than he's ever had. I think it's as simple as that. Like, instead of home runs, they're going to be doubles, and we're just going to have to be okay with that. And I am okay with that, by the way, out of the catcher. So if those guys continue to just be normal, which I think they're getting there, and Bobby Witt Jr. begins to be normal in the power category, how much will that lift this offense up? And I think it will be some, but it will be helpful. And then it's, again, like, can they get to league average at that point? Can this be a league average? And that's where you have to look from the outside, because at that point you're looking internally, right? If all those things happen collectively, that is now what you've got. Like, that's what you have. It's not going to get much better or any better than that. I think that's where you look at it, and there has to be an infusion of something else, whether it be Jack Caglione, which makes the most sense because he's already there. He doesn't cost you anything. And the one thing they're lacking so badly is the thing that he does the best, right? But he's a rookie when he gets called up. So we got to temper expectations.
Yeah,
just that, for that.
That's honestly, as much as I am excited for the day to come when Jack Caglione joins the big league squad, I do think that it's important to temper expectations a little bit. I mean, what I don't want is I don't want the weight of the world on Jack Caglione's shoulders. I don't want him. I don't want him to get to the big league squad with this idea in his head that he's got to be the white knight to come in and save the day. Like, he's got to be the guy to, kickstart the offense and be the major difference maker in whether the Royals are going to score runs or not. Because when you're a rookie and you've never been there before, I think it could be pretty easy to start pressing. And the good thing about Caglione is that his sheer abilities and his sheer talents should overcome all of that. But I just don't, he's a rookie, and I just don't want him to feel like he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders to be the guy to pull the Royals out of the slump that they've been in offensively.
No, he's not going to be, and I don't think he needs to be that. He just needs to provide them power. There's almost no world where he doesn't provide them power, like he will. If he does nothing else, he'll do that to some degree. But probably he's doing it from the 6 or 7 hole, and that's perfectly fine. But he's free, and if he's learning to play the outfield, he doesn't cost you anything. So it's going to be, it'll be advantageous regardless of what he produces that you can just kind of have him for free, basically. And then to me, because that's going to happen at some point, do they also need to go outside? I would still say yes, but not for some headline. We talked about Noah Cameron and the possibilities of maybe you flip him for a future piece. Those discussions are, I'm fine with those discussions, and I'm fine if the Royals have them, but it's going to have to be somebody that helps you for more than this year. I think the only other thing that they would need for this year, and this is why I don't think ultimately they would make that trade, including Noah Cameron, is because it doesn't have to be like an everyday producer. It just needs to be another guy who can, in the right spots, do that thing that you need, which is hit for a little bit of power. They didn't get that. Basically what you wanted Hunter Renfroe to be, right? Like what you hoped Hunter Renfroe would provide for you. You just got to go find that again.
They've tried to find a number of guys to do that, right? Renfroe and Nelson Velasquez, they wanted him to be that guy. Mark Canha, and Canha's produced in a smaller role for sure. He's been fine. But they've been trying to find somebody that can generate some power in that lineup for a long time. I mean, even like, they've probably been searching for somebody in that role since what, Carlos Santana? I mean, since he left the left the team, probably somebody in that role.
The exact picture of what you'd want to bring
as
in.
As soon as they lost him, they've been searching for somebody that can generate some power and basically be the guy that you look at and say, we don't need you to do anything else, but just be a power hitter from time. We don't even care if you strike out. Just get up there and if you can generate power for us every once in a while, get one over the fence. That's what we're paying you to do. And that's what Renfro's role was supposed to be. And he just was unable to do that.
Yeah. So I think there should be some optimism for the offense. Now the flip of that is, can the pitching maintain what it's done? And I think that's not fair either. So then you need a little more out of the offense than just a little bit out of the offense, because the pitching's probably not going to hold up to the pace it did through April. It'll still be very good. I still think they'll have one of the better staffs in the American League. It just feels like, they're just reaching, and it's just that far out of reach to them, hitting that groove that we need them to hit. And again, none of this is like panic mode, because they're still 3 games over 500. They're still square in the middle of a wild card battle, all those things. But here they are in a big series against Detroit, and we're wondering these things, and it's going to be June 1st soon. And so,
Well, and keep in mind, too, I mean, you're head-to-head against the division leader. This three-game set, I mean,
you can get down
10 games. You could cut it to 4 and be right back in it. It's a crucial series.
That's a swing. That is a swing of significance in what could happen here.
And considering it's only a 3-game series, you can't split it. So you can't end this weekend right where you started. You're either going to be closer to the Tigers or you're going to be further away.
I don't know what it is, and maybe this is what's spurring a lot of this for me. Like, I just have that, maybe it's a lack of sleep, too much time on the road, but I just have kind of like this weird feeling, taking my head vibe that the Royals are going to wake up a little bit offensively in this series, which makes no sense because of the pitchers they're about to go up against. I know. I don't know what it is.
You going to put some money on that?
It's delirium, probably. No, I don't. But it's there, and I can't ignore. I don't know why.
What does that mean? Can you quantify that? If they wake up offensively, what does that mean?
Probably because the magnitude of it, and I love guys like Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez in high leverage magnitude moments like that, that they could just do the right things this series, and maybe it's just win the series. I don't know what it is, but I just have this feeling.
I mean, let's say in three games combined, how many runs do they score in your mind in those three games?
What does my brain tell me, or what is this tick?
What is the little tingling on the back of your neck tell you?
Like, you know, 14, 15. And I'm telling you, I don't know. Now my brain would tell me it's going to be less than 10, but you know, it's just, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is.
15 runs combined over the three games and they win the series, take two of three.
Yeah. Now I'm not, again, that's just this weird feeling. If I were, you know, betting this or anything, well, I would probably, because I do try to follow that when I'm betting, but yeah, that's what it is. It's more likely that they'll lose two of three and score like six runs based on what we've seen and based on who they're going up against, Mize and Scooper.
I mean, look, they get Lugo back tonight, you know, like that's a huge return. Waka and Bubic. I mean, like, I think that, and especially the finale, you've got Bubic, you know, against Montero, and Montero's been okay, but that's the one matchup to keep our eyes on, because especially if they fall down, which I hope they don't, but if they fall down tonight and tomorrow night, at least you've got Bubic on the bump against probably the worst of the three for the Tigers on Sunday to try to salvage the series.
1-1 and 12 runs. That's how it'll work. You know what's crazy about Scooble, as you see him and all the talk, and rightfully so, how good he's been this year? Bubic has been better. Bubic has been better. Like,
yes. Lower ERA, less strikeouts than Scooble. Scooble is blowing people away.
Everybody's going to have less strikeouts.
Bubic's ERA is, you know, under 1.5. As of right now, the first 2 months of the season, he's probably your AL Cy Young, or at least in the top three.
He's right there. He's right there. All right, we'll table the Royals until we get Jalen Thompson in the next hour. Let's talk about some of this Big 12 news when we return. Couple interesting things coming out of the kind of the finale of these meetings. We'll hit that next on Sports Daily. Don't go away. All right. Welcome back in, everybody. It's another hour of Sports Daily. We're glad to be here with you on this Friday, getting you ready for a weekend. A big baseball weekend is on our brain with the Royals and the Tigers. We'll have Jalen Thompson later in the hour from the KC Star Royals beat reporter, our Royals insider, to talk more about that. We've got all kinds of stuff other than that that we want to hit on today. A lot of it, Tommy, has to do with the college sports world, the Big 12, what they're doing, what's potentially happening with March Madness. Let's get to the Big 12 part here off the top first, and then we can talk about what expansion might mean for the college basketball tournament and why that's getting some run. But up first is the Big 12, who, in an interview with Front Office Sports, Brett Yormark said other things among they are not right now looking to sell naming rights, and they are not looking right now to take on private equity partners. Now, we've talked for about the last year about how we think private equity may start to work its way into college athletics. And the reasons are, you know, they're pretty simple as to why that might be an option for some places. It's because they're about to need a whole bunch of money in a revenue share. And in the short term, while they try to figure out how all that works, a little revenue infusion would make things more flexible for them, right? Eventually, you're going to have to massage that out and you know, make the dollars and cents matter and be meaningful. But unless you want to, you know, be in a tough financial spot for a few years while you can do that, yeah, taking some private equity money would make some sense, right? And those guys can easily envision a return on their investment when you're talking about the big dollars of college athletics. So that it makes sense on both sides. But I don't know that I ever thought the Big 12 would be a major player in this right out of the gates, because the Big 12 is settled as far as realignment goes. There's nothing else they need to do in that world. Now, I suppose if they went in and they were trying to aggressively poach a team and they wanted the part of their offer to be, hey, we'll help you with your buyout. I mean, maybe that's a bit of a stretch. To me, the equity money makes more sense for schools specifically trying to get out of their current deals and pay those buyouts. So I never really thought, like, if I was the Big 12 either, because you don't want to give up a, you know, you don't want to give up a stake of what's to cut, which is what would happen if you took private equity. So I guess I never thought of them as somebody in that market as a league, but they must have been, or that question wouldn't have been asked by a business reporter to Brett Yormark. But I think it's too early for them to go down that road. I don't think they need to do that yet.
Yeah, it makes me wonder what the financial component is. And it could very well be. I mean, Yormark says that they're not willing to pursue that right now. Is it that, or is it that there's not a private equity firm that, you know, is willing to jump in right this second for the conference? It could be either one, and we won't know that. I mean, I would imagine the value of these conferences, even a conference like the Big 12, that there's definitely, I would imagine, an ROI on that for any private equity firm that wants to come in and make an investment. But maybe it's not quite at the point yet where you know, one of those private equity groups feels like they want to jump in at this stage in the game. Maybe it's not until things get more permanently settled in the world of college athletics, where, you know, private equity feels like it's secure enough for them to jump in. There's still a lot that is, you know, left to be settled in the world of college athletics. And if I'm a hedge fund, if I'm a private equity guy, and I'm looking at investments, yeah, there might be an ROI there. There probably is an ROI there to invest in a specific conference, whether it be the Big 12 or otherwise. But there's still so much instability right now in college athletics in general, and we don't even know from a legal perspective and from politicians and all of that what it's going to look like when the dust settles. I may want to stay out of that game until I know for sure what the playing field actually looks like.
Unless the price is right, you know. So I'm with you. I totally agree. I don't know if that's the reason that they didn't do something, but I would be in this. I would be the same way. I also don't know what the value in a league is versus a school specifically. I don't know, like, what stake are you buying into if you're doing that with the Big 12, because the money, the big money that the Big 12 makes goes to the schools. It's split up among the schools. So, like, I'd rather be an investor in one of the athletic departments at a school who I know is taking a revenue share. I don't know what's there for the Big 12. Like, what is there? Because all that money they make in TV deal, that ultimately just goes to the schools anyway. Are you saying now you're going to take a stake of that and less goes to the schools? Big 12's not going to do that. The schools wouldn't let them do that. So I think that's the part of this that doesn't make total sense to me, is, and I'm sure that there is something somewhere. I don't understand what the equity would have to gain in the league itself versus the schools specifically. Like, private equity to Florida State right now makes all the sense in the world to me, because you go in, you front them the money for their buyout, and you take whatever the predetermined amount is back on the revenue they would get by joining the Big Ten or the SEC or the whatever, you know, like that to me, that maths out much simpler and is much easier to follow. The leagues themselves they don't make as much sense to me. I mean, I'm not saying that they don't have, of course they do, but I don't know what it would be. The naming rights are pretty simple, right? You're the, you know, the Phillips 66, which is, I think, who does the tournament, right? You're the Phillips 66 Big 12. Okay. That one to me tells me that there probably wasn't the kind of buyer that Brett Yormark wants, because I don't know what would hold them back from just selling the naming rights.
Right.
Nobody cares. Literally nobody cares, right? Nobody cares that it's the, you know, the Quick Trip Big 12 or whatever. Like, that's totally irrelevant, not a big deal. It wouldn't affect the branding or the impact of the league at all. Nothing. So that tells me they probably don't have a buyer, at least at the price that Brett Yormark values the league naming rights at. And I think he pretty much said that, right? Like, they know what it's worth and they don't want to sell it for less than that. But I think if they had the buyer for what they think it's worth, they'd sell it tomorrow. That tells me they don't have the buyer that they want, right? It's all that one's a little simpler, I think, to understand than the equity part of this. I think they're just, they just don't have the price they want yet, so they're not going
to
sell it.
Yeah, I think that that's a huge part of it. I mean, you have to kind of read between the lines when they say, yeah, we're not really interested in pursuing that right now.
We have to, yeah. Protect this brand.
It means that you're not getting the valuation that you feel like you should right now.
Which is totally fine.
And I think that at some point, you probably will. I mean, I think as this continues to evolve and the world of college athletics continues to evolve, it wouldn't shock me if at some point they are able to get the valuation that they feel like is fair, just because things are changing every single day. We talked about it on the program yesterday and had a great conversation with Tim Fitzgerald about it. There's so much instability right now because of, you know, some of the things that the SEC is saying and Greg Sankey is saying. Like, if I'm, again, if I'm a private equity guy, I don't know if I really want to jump in right now until the dust is settled and I know which way is up, because there's so much happening right now. Unless I can get in on the ground floor, unless it's going to be cheaper and I can get in at a discount because of the instability. And that's, again, probably where Brett Yormark is saying, yeah, we're going to wait. We're going to wait until we can actually get more money.
The Big 12 doesn't need to be in a hurry on any of this. That's the beauty and the brilliance of what he did when he was hyper aggressive right out of the gates, is because they can now wait out this last settling of things. They're fine. The Big 12 is in great shape. They weren't squeezed out of the CFP, which we'll get to on the other side, and what Yormark prefers and why he prefers it. Like, they didn't get the squeeze. They didn't get any of that. There's no rush for the Big 12 to do anything brash anymore unless it's further expansion. And I think all the talk of that has cooled significantly. And there are good reasons for it, right? You're going to have to revenue share. You're going to have to do this. Are the TV deals in the current economy? Are these networks lining up to go pay more money? Probably not. So it's the right time to just chill. And I think he's just going to chill for a minute, like the rest of us are, right? We're all just sort of waiting. Like, what is this all? How does this all play out, right? Both in the landscape of the NCAA and the landscape of the global economy. Like, how do we, what's the other side of this? And when does that come? That's when you get aggressive again. Unless you've just got big stones and all the money in the world and you can go take advantage of it now, the Big 12's not in that position. None of these schools are, because they're about to have to share a lot of their revenue. They're the opposite of that. They're in a tight spot right now that they've got to figure out how in the world they're going to navigate it. That's the next settling of things. All right, when we come back, there's other, probably more interesting to most people, stuff about tournament expansion and what does Brett Yormark think about, you know, the format when it goes to 16 teams. What does he prefer? What does he think about the SEC and the Big Ten holding the power here? Honestly, he probably feels, I think, about the way we do about it. We'll tell you what we mean there. Jalen Thompson coming this hour as well. It is Sports Daily. It is a Friday. We're glad you're here with us. It's all Brockton Caster, Max Power producing. We'll be right back.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is a Friday, and that means Tommy is going to walk us down the, what do they call it, the runway?
Yeah, it's the Friday Fit.
The twirl.
Yeah, the Friday Fit, our friends at 3570 Golf Co. We are smack dab at the beginning of the most beautiful golf weather of the year, and 35 by 70 Golf Co., they are all about great golf apparel for this part of the country. I've had people ask me before, like, where can I find their apparel? Of course, you can go online, 35x70golfco.com. You can check out their full selection of shirts and of hoodies and head covers and hats and all the new arrivals and everything that they've got for your golf wardrobe. You can also find them at various golf shops around the city of Wichita. I know Flint Hills National, they carry some 3570 Golf Co. Merchandise. There are several other golf courses that do. And if you're going to the Wichita Open in a couple of weeks, they will have a pop-up shop. So you can go by there. And it's actually, I think, fairly close to where we're going to be set up doing our show live on Thursday and Friday. As you're going there enjoying all the great golf, you can go buy some of their merchandise. They'll have a pop-up shop there at Crestview during the Wichita Open. So if you want to find out more about them, go online, 35x70golfco.com, a local golf apparel company. We are so happy they're a supporter and partner of this program. And you can use the promo code Tommy on their website and get 10% off your first order.
There you go. 35-7. We appreciate that. Can't wait to see some of their stuff out there at the Open. Great sponsor. We appreciate all our sponsors here, and they're a great one. All right, let's continue the conversation, Tommy, about the Big 12. The Big 12 looking to, you know, continue the partnership with the WWE, which is fun. It's cool. They do the belt and they do a couple of things. Guess they're going to have shows in local markets ahead of big football games. They're going to try and time that out.
That's pretty cool.
Which is good. That's just great. Cool. You put players and coaches in the audience and you get people fired up and that crowd, the WWE has always been really, really, really good at that. And that's a cool connection, I think, for fans and players as much as it is anything else. So a couple other things out of this, you know, the meetings and all of these things. Let's start with football and the expanded playoff to 16 teams. Brett Yormark seems to want 5 plus 11, right? Not what we talked about, which is, what is it, 4, 4, 2, 2, and then 1, and then at large, that would leave 3, I think, at large, whatever it is. I still think that I got no problem with the Big 12 being guaranteed 2 teams. I just don't. You just go look. They almost never would have had more than 2 anyway. And there's a lot of years they'd only had 1 if you take out Texas and Oklahoma. So I think that there is plenty to be had. Now, his reasoning, I think he brought that up because he was asked about the conference championship game. And he said, you know, we still value that. We want to value that. We like the player weigh in scenario. I get it. I get it because there's a lot of money for the league in that championship game. But if we're talking about, you know, positioning yourself in that CFP, I just give yourself a championship game. And like we said, you know, or give yourself, I don't know how else you could do it. Give yourself a 1 versus 4 and 2 versus 3 and the 2 winners get in. I don't know what you can do to still like amplify that weekend. But this 5 plus 11 model, I think, is kind of dangerous for the Big 12. I do think that. And I don't think we see it yet because you're like, oh, yeah, I'd rather have 11 at-larges because I don't want 8 of the spots to be guaranteed to go to essentially the SEC and the Big 10. But the reality is they would most years anyway. If there are 11 at-larges, guess what? The vast majority of those are going to be Big 10 and SEC teams. And I think what can happen is, and then there are some years where you might only have 1 team in. And that's like last year would have been kind of one of, they'd been real close last year. I don't know that that's a better option. I really don't.
Yeah, I think really the biggest concern that I can see, and maybe part of the concern from Brett Yormark, is that, okay, we get two guaranteed in all of this. And that's fine for now, but we need to make sure that that's the way it stays long term, permanently moving forward. Because at this point, like, what would stop the CFP and these conferences from implementing this model and the Big 12 gets 2 guaranteed teams and they do it for a year and then they're all back to the table and the SEC is like, you know what, we want more. And then we go through this all again the very next year. So I could see Brett Yormark, I could see the Big 12, I could see the ACC saying, look, like, we're okay with this model and the way that we're putting it together, and we feel good about the number of guaranteed auto bids we get and all of that, but we need to lock this in for X number of years so we don't revisit this every single year. We don't want to be going through this again and again and again, because I think that it could be a pretty slippery slope. And if you give a conference like the SEC an inch, there's a good chance they're going to take a mile.
I agree with that. And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know what sort of agreement they're going to, I don't know.
I mean, we talked about this yesterday on the show, and I don't know if you caught this. Greg Sankey is saying the quiet part out loud now. I mean, he is embracing being the villain in all of this. He flat out said, his quote was, "I've got people in my ear who are asking me, why are we even part of the NCAA?" And whether or not they're not going to leave, I don't think. I would be shocked if they do. But he's absolutely using that as leverage, right? Like, he's absolutely using that as a way to try to throw their weight around to get exactly what they want. And so I don't fault him necessarily for doing that, because
he's right.
They are the strongest, right? They're the big dog. They're at the top of the pile. They're at the top of the mountain. The concern is, can we get them locked into something that's agreeable and at least somewhat equitable to where they're not coming back and doing this next year and the year after that and the year after that?
Yeah, I wonder because this one didn't last very long. It only lasted a year. It'll be 2 years.
2 years.
So it's a good point. I don't know, but everybody's just going to need to understand. And Brett Yormark does. He was asked about this and he said, "I don't have any problem with them holding the pen. I just need them to do the right thing." Right. Like because the reality is, they're more powerful in this situation. It's okay.
Fitz brought up a really good point yesterday when we were talking to him about this. He mentioned that really the key conference in all of this is the Big Ten, because they hold a lot of power also, but they've not been vocal. Like, they've let the SEC, they've let Greg Sankey be the villain and be kind of the front man for all of this. And Fitz brought up the point that he wouldn't be shocked if Brett Yormark and the ACC commissioner, if they're talking to the Big Ten, like, do you really want to go down this path with the SEC? Like, do you really want to, you really want to help light the match for the destruction of nationalization of college football? You know, because that's what the SEC is moving towards. I don't think it's going to happen either. It's all posturing, and that's okay. It's all posturing. But I do think that the Big Ten holds a pretty substantial key to all of this, because they've not been vocal as far as being the villains in any of this.
So there's this, what's interesting is there is, like, if you eliminated the Big 12 and the ACC right now, the way that the Big 10 has positioned itself and the teams that it has brought in, you would have a national footprint geographically with only those two leagues. So
you wouldn't have it you kind of would.
In theory and technically you would, but I think there is an absolute misconception, and I think it's going away. And I think that's why the Big 12 and the ACC are included in everything now in those times, because I think as much as anybody wants to say anything, these guys are smart at what they do. They're very good. Greg Sankey is a good commissioner, right? Like, he is great for their league. He's been at the forefront of all of this, right? You can not like the things that he does, but he does the right things for his league. He's very, very smart. Just like Brett Yormark's very, very smart. I think he knows in his heart that you cannot cut out the fabric of what makes college football, college football. You can't do it, or it will hurt your product, because you're going to take away from who and why they watch it. I think he knows that. That's why I don't think there's ever any talk of Greg Sankey is not saying we want 16 out of 16 spots. No, he's saying we'll give you four, but we're going to take eight.
Yeah. But look, I think it's unlikely that this ever happens, but let's just say, for argument's sake, hypothetically, that the SEC and the Big Ten decide, look, we're going to break away. Like, we've got the power.
They can do that tomorrow.
We've got the national appeal, kind of, with teams on the West Coast, with the California teams that are now part of the Big Ten. So we're going to break away. We're going to do our own thing. They know, I mean, Greg Sankey, at least, and I'm sure the Big Ten also knows this, there would be a network that would follow them immediately for that.
And if there was
but I guarantee you, whether we're talking about ESPN, Fox, or otherwise, there would be a network, I do think long term, that would support that. It could be Amazon Prime. It could be Netflix. There would be a network that would follow them
in the short term.
I think in the long term, they would.
Fractured. The product will be fractured. If they ever did that, it would fracture. You know,
Think about it this way. Let's say Prime Video is like, you know what? We're going to do a 10-year deal to air the SEC, Big Ten.
What happens in 11 years, though?
Okay, sure, we can talk about that then. But it's better than what the alternative is. Like, if that's the choice, it's either jump on board and be the rights holder for this or be the rights holder for nothing. They're going to do that every day of the week.
Right, that's a short-sighted. That'd be like, it's not exactly, but it's sort of like if in the NFL, there are more valuable franchises than the other ones, right? Let's say the top 10 franchises, you know, the equivalent, right? A third of it, or even if you wanted to take half, said, you know what? We really don't need the Jaguars. Why are we dealing with XY? Like the bot, let's just go do a different, we'll go do our own thing. You think the networks are going to, like, they'll line up short term, but that league's not going to be as popular. And so, like, you have to, and I think this is why I think Greg Sankey is smart. If they were going to do this, they'd have already done it. They could have. Like, they could have already done this, but they haven't yet. Why? Because I think they know it's a bad idea. And so what is then this settling? I think that now we're getting to the point where, and I've said this and I'll say it and I believe it, if there's representation for the Big 12, the Big 12 will be a winner. Because without Texas and Oklahoma, there was a real threat that the Big 12 would not have representation in this thing long term. So I agree with you. Let's put some time on it. Let's say, okay, if we go 4-4, 2-2-1, then we need assurances that this is going to be in place for, I mean, I would say 10 years, but they'll never do that. For 6 years. Like, give us this for 6 years. And we'll be good with it. And let's see what happens and let's see where this falls. And then the Big 12 can go get aggressive again, right? And maybe think about expansion. But the problem is, as much as you want to do that, the ACC is not going to last forever. They're going to blow up. So then you got to redo it again, right? So agree to it. That's fine. But in the back of your head, if you're Brett Yormark, you're thinking, all right, now next step. And maybe this is why I was asked about private equity. What do we have to do to go get some of the ACC? What do we have to do to make that merger happen, which would be the final chapter to ensuring placement for the Big 12 among all of this forever? If you had the joining of those two leagues, you'd have that, right? Or if you had the top end of that coming into the Big 12, you would have that at that point. So to me, that's still the top priority for the Big 12 when the time comes. But in the short term, if they're giving you 5-11, there will be years that the Big 12 only gets one team in my opinion. It's going to happen. So if they're going to give me two and the chance for another with the at-larges, I'm taking that. I think it's a better deal for the Big 12. You're guaranteeing doubling your revenue from making it into the CFP first and foremost. Like, they're giving you a guarantee that you're going to double it because you've got two teams in now instead of just one potentially. And you get two teams in instead of just one, which will happen if they go 5-11.
Yeah, in my mind, there is no scenario where the Big 12 would turn this down or where the ACC would turn this down. I mean, I think this is the.
But I can't figure out why they like 5+11 better.
I think this is the best offer that they're going to get. And so I think you take it as long as, again, going back to what we originally said, as long as you can get some clarity and a commitment to do this long term from the other conferences. I don't want to do this every single year. If I don't want to do it every single year, I guarantee you that Brett Yormark doesn't want to do this every single year and have these conversations like, okay, what are we going to do this year with the seating? What's the CFP going to look like now? Lock it in. Let's have some stability and let's move forward for a while where we don't have to worry about this and have this discussion all the time.
In 2024, and I agree with you, and I think the SEC and the Big Ten would like to have the flexibility to redo it all the time. It's 16 teams. In 2024, the Big 12 would have had one team in. In 2023, just looking at this, and I'm only looking at the current teams that are in the league, not where they were when this happened, which is, I get it. That's not like totally, there's no better way to do it, I don't think. They'd have had one in, right? It'd have been Arizona in 2023. 2022, that was TCU's year,
yeah.
I think, that they got through. So you had TCU.
And K-State.
And K-State would have been. So there's two, right? You'd have had the two that they're guaranteeing you anyway. 2021, they would have had, of the current teams in, they would have had Baylor. They would have had BYU. There's two. How much further do we need to go back on this thing? I mean, we're almost 5 years back now. They never would have had more than two teams in. Take the two. There are years where you only have one. Take the two. That's what I can't figure out, why they don't like.
They will. They will.
But they're all saying they want 5-11. And is it only, back to full circle on this, is it only because they want to make the Big 12 championship game seem like it means more? That's a stupid reason. You're going to get, like, people are going to watch and people are going to come to the Big 12 championship if there is not only that thing on the line. Like, they're still going to come. It's fun. Like, people are going to watch it. It still means something to be the Big 12 champion. It doesn't, you know, look at the Big 12 basketball championship. Very well attended. There might be seven teams that are going to make it in. It doesn't mean anything, but it's still a championship, right? I think we're overthinking it. Take the two teams. Most years, that would be a good deal for the Big 12, especially without Texas and Oklahoma,
You know, I'm looking at an article now that came out yesterday from ESPN where, you know, the 5-11 is apparently gaining traction among leaders of all the conferences right now. So that's interesting to me.
The SEC and the Big Ten can so clearly game the rankings, you're giving them too much power to get 11 at-larges. You just are. It's too easy for them to say, well, we played the toughest schedule, when they only play themselves, right? Like, it's too easy for that to happen. It makes me crazy. It's not that big a deal.
So your
as long
mark,
as Big 12 gets one team in.
Your Mark gave a quote to ESPN about the 5-11. He said, "It has always been our first choice. It's fair and rewards on-field performance. I'm not surprised that SEC coaches like it." Well, of course they do. Of course, that's not the question, whether or not they like it. Why do you like it? Why does the ACC like it? That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Because they think they're going to get strong-armed if they can only get two in. But again, and this isn't even as much, the ACC would be more negatively affected by this than the Big 12. As much as I hate to admit it, they have bigger football brands right now in the ACC. They just do. I don't like it, but it's reality. I wouldn't like it if I were the ACC, but I'd damn sure like it if I was the Big 12. That's just my opinion. I don't really care. Just as long as we get one in, that'll make me happy enough.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Jalen Thompson, a Royals insider, is here with us on this Friday. We're glad to have him. It is, well, it's big series, Jalen. It's the biggest one had yet this year, probably the biggest one they'll play for the next month or so. It's the Tigers, and I don't know. I think now's the best time, right? Now there's never been a better time for this team to clutch back up. We were talking about this earlier in the show. Like, it's interesting because it's felt like Salvi and Vinny and all, like, those guys are coming back to their average pretty, I mean, almost across the board, other than Salvi hits more doubles than home runs now. Mm-hmm. Bobby Witt Jr.'s power is down, but it's really this, like, it's this clutch thing that they just haven't found. That's the difference right now. It's just like they're unclutch. Is that Is that something you see changing? Is that just a law of averages? They were probably over clutch last year and now they're unclutch this year. Is there a middle ground? And like, how much better can just that make this offense?
I think there is a middle ground, but also I think a lot of it has to go to, like, last year, Vinny Pasquantino hit 360 with runners in scoring position. Salvi had a really high mark as well. Well, this year, they're hitting 197 and 229 before Wednesday's game when I last checked it. And I'm sure those numbers are probably went down considering that, you know, they weren't the guys to drive in those runs in Wednesday's victory. So when you look at those two guys in particular, they are the key. You know what Bobby Witt Jr. is going to do. The power's not there this year, but he can have a strong week and he'll be right back in the discussion for the MVP race and things like that. So he's always going to have an all-star season. But the two guys that you mentioned, Vinny and Salvi, those are the two that have to get this offense to go where they want to go. And they've been hitting well of late, but in those clutch situations, that's where they're going to have to really make their mark, because the Royals cannot keep winning games 3-2 or 2-1. They have to go out and score 5, 6, 7 runs to really feel comfortable about making a run to get back into the divisional race and also the wild card standings as well.
Let's talk about Noah Cameron for a little bit, Jalen. We had you on Tuesday. It was before he made his start this week. I think we all kind of, you know, wait for this guy to come back down to earth a little bit because he's performing through his first 4 MLB starts at a level that we haven't seen ever in Major League Baseball. You have to go back to the late 1800s to find another pitcher that has pitched as deep into a game and given up as few runs as he has through their first 4 MLB starts. And the kind of production is incredible. He looks like he's the real deal. What are you seeing from him?
Oh, he's the real deal. He is the real deal, and he'll tell you that he wants to be the real deal. He loves the spotlight. He loves to pitch on the grandest of stages, and it doesn't faze him at all. He's very confident in what he likes to do on the mound and how he likes to attack hitters. And I think that it just oozes out of him when you see him be able to not really have his fastball, but use off-speed pitches to still give up one run over 6 2/3 innings. He is a guy that the Royals really like, they really love. But the problem, and it's not really a problem, but it's a dilemma that they have right now. They have 6 starting pitchers. So somebody won't be pitching in that starting rotation. And they might not want to do it, but it's a possibility that he could be sent back down to AAA when everybody's fully healthy. You got Seth Lugo going today. You're going to have Cole Reagans potentially going to rehab assignment and come back within a week or so. So they have to figure out what do they want to do with Noah Cameron. But he certainly earned and deserves to be up in the major leagues. So it's a problem that they're going to have to solve. But if it was me, I'm keeping them up here.
Do they have any appetite, Jalen, with Lugo and Reagans both now spending time on the IL? Reagans probably should have been on the IL twice now. Do they not have an appetite to roll with a 6-man rotation? Or simply put Lorenzen in the bullpen because he hasn't been very good in a while?
Yeah, both of those options are going to be on the table. I think that with a 6-man rotation right now, they really don't have a long stretch of games with out and off day.
That's true.
In June, they're going to have every Monday off, basically, so you can get away with not having a 6-man rotation. But I think that could be something that's on the table. Also, you got to look at, do you want to rest Chris Bubich some, because he's tracking to pitch a career high in innings. And, you know, while he's been good and he's been Cy Young quality good so far, but how long would that last? Can he make it go the entire season? You mentioned Cole Reagans. He's been injured with the groin. You know, that's something that just doesn't go away. That can flare up at any moment. So how do you kind of manage him? I think Seth Lugo, he's going to be pitching with the right middle finger inflammation. I think he'll be fine, but, you know, that could flare up too. So, you know, there are certain things that they have to consider And I think going to a six-man might be on the table. Also, Michael Lorenzen, like you said, he has experience pitching out of the bullpen, too. Yeah. So that could be on the table as well.
I thought it was kind of interesting, Jalen, that the series against the Reds, there was a situation in one of the games late when Matt Quatrero did not go to Lucas Ercig in the bullpen, and he had Estevez work longer. I think it was in the finale. Was that on Wednesday's game? I believe it was.
Yeah.
When they did that, you know, Ercig has been a little shaky as of late, probably the shakiest that we've seen him in a Royals uniform thus far. Was that a one-time thing in your mind, or are there some legitimate concerns about Ercig?
Oh, there's no concerns about Ercig. He didn't pitch on Wednesday because he was sick. So they stayed away from him because, you know, he just wasn't feeling well. And really, over the last week, they've also had some guys that just haven't been feeling well with the stomach bug. So
personal space.
Yeah, it's kind of like just it's been going through the clubhouse.
That makes more sense. That's good to know. Before we start to preview the series this weekend, I do want to ask you about Cags. The last time we talked, which was Monday, I think, I did not realize at that point we were all so enamored, at least I was, with the things he was doing at the plate. I guess the Royals are finally putting him out in the outfield some, which is an easy excuse for them to wait. I mean, I get it. Is that real? Like, how much of that is he doing, and how real are the chances that's how he gets a path in? Because if he can play an outfield spot, now you add him to the middle of the lineup, and I think that's even more attractive, as we've talked about all year long.
Yeah, it's real. The Royals want him to learn the outfield. They even sent Rusty Kuntz, longtime coach in the system, to go and help him in AAA. Awesome. They have him out there 3 days a week. They're probably going to up that up a little bit more in the upcoming days and weeks. But they want him to learn the outfield because they know that that's where he will have to play if he's going to come to the major league level. I mean, Vinny Pasquantino's at first base. He's not going anywhere. So they have to figure out where he is going to play. So it's good that he's learning right field and he has a little experience in left field. So that can give them a little versatility of where they want to place him. But the key for Jack Caglione is going to be he has to stop chasing the baseball every time he's up at the plate. When he connects, it's loud and it goes over the fence, or it's 110 miles per hour on the ground. But sometimes that he likes to be aggressive and chase the baseball a lot. So when he gets to the big leagues, pitchers are going to know that, and they're going to just throw him nothing but off speed and things that they want him to chase. So
is it when we're looking for that, is it more about seeing him walk or not seeing him strike out? Like, which of those? I know that's like the final step for a hitter. Is it just walks? Like, would they need to see him walk some because it's showing he's being selective?
Yeah, I think you need the walks to be up because it's the plate discipline, you know. Just everybody's going to strike out. I mean, when you come to the big leagues, you're going to strike out. That's just what you have to expect. But can you work a count? Can you get in favorable positions where that you can use your power to your advantage? Like right now, he hits home runs because pitchers make mistakes in AAA and he's hitting all the mistake pitches. Or he's getting in a count where the ball's over the plate and he's just not missing it. But what happens when he is just not a tick there? And he's got to be able to use his advantage of seeing the play, seeing the whole pitcher before hitting the baseball. Then that's kind of what they want to see him take those next steps. And I think he can get there. I think he can get there. The question is going to be, how long do they wait? And do you allow him to learn that in the major leagues because your team needs him, or do you hope that the big league squad can start hitting the baseball better, and then you bring him up and allow him to learn when the team is running well?
This is a huge weekend series for the Royals at home against the division leader Tigers, one of the best teams in Major League Baseball, and the Royals are going to be up against a couple of really good pitchers in Casey Mize tonight, Tarek Skubal on Saturday. They've got a great rotation themselves, and you know Chris Bubich will pitch on Sunday. You've got Lugo back on the bump tonight, and Michael Wacha on Saturday. What are some of the keys in your mind? I know we've talked a lot about the offense, driving in runs, doing what they can do, but you're up against a couple of really good pitchers this weekend against Detroit.
I think that if the Royals want to make a jump in the AL Central, they gotta make some hay this weekend, like you said, against the Tigers. You have three games against them. You're facing their best pitchers. I think that this weekend you have to make a statement and say that, hey, we're not going anywhere. We're right here. Like you said, they have their best pitchers going, and the Royals have arguably some of their best pitchers going as well. So I really like the matchup. Did you say it was Skubal and Bubich, I believe?
Yep.
That's going to be really great to see.
No, not AL. Head-to-head.
Not head-to-head. No. Skubal is on Saturday. Bubich is pitching on Sunday.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, but to see both of those guys would be great to see where they're going to be at this season. But I think, like you said, this is a series where the Royals have to prove that they're in this, because if they don't play and perform well, they could easily slide further and further back in the division, and that's not where they want to be.
To the tune of 10 games, if it doesn't go well. Jalen, that series begins tonight. We're looking forward to it. We appreciate it. And let's do this again next week.
Yeah, let's do it. Thank you guys so much. See you then.
There goes Jalen Thompson, our Royals insider, beat reporter for the KC Star. Find him at Jalen Thompson. Love it. I thought that was right. And we've talked about it. Watch Cags's walks. See if he can walk. He's not striking out at an abnormal rate, but he's not walking at all. So that was good to, at least he wasn't, I haven't checked his stats this week, so I should look at that. But yeah, you gotta get the plate discipline is that last thing. And sometimes I think teams are more willing to bypass that. But if the Royals are trying to, let's be honest, make excuses to keep him down just a little bit longer, that's an easy one to look at. Learning the outfield is an easy one to look at. It's all working itself out correctly, I think. But man, I love seeing him play the outfield, because now he really helps them if he comes up as an outfielder. Now you don't have this dilemma that they could potentially face. All right, that'll do it. It's Fun Friday show. It's pretty easy to get excited about this series coming up here. So the Royals will play tonight against Detroit, 7 o'clock pregame coverage, and then the special broadcast, don't miss it, over on KEYN, Riverfest's opening night fireworks at 10:45 tonight. Late night fireworks.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We've got the Sundown Parade tonight. I'll be judging that tonight, so if you're downtown, come by and say hi. We'll be judging the floats.
Are you taking bribes?
As far as you know, I'm not, but
not officially.
Not officially.
Just keep that in mind. All right. We'll see everybody Monday. It'll be TJ in for Tommy. Thanks for being with us today. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.